Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Today we are celebrating the birth of our Prophet Muhammad, who was born on this day. It's a great day of the Muslim world. The Prophet gave us this religion, which is a religion of peace.
Well, that's what they say about Muhammad nowadays, and the religion that he founded, a religion of peace. We've not only heard it from the devotees of Islam, but from American presidents and statesmen and women. Is Islam a religion of peace? Was Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, a man of peace? On Saturday, this last weekend, Muslims all around the world celebrated the birthday of Muhammad. How did they do so, and what exactly were they celebrating? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in live this Monday afternoon, March the 1st. We'll start out with a brief biography of Muhammad. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us. A little bit later in this hour, we'll be talking with Ken Samples, beginning a three-part daily series on answering tough questions about the Christian faith. Today, questions about the existence of God. We'll take your questions and comments here for the next hour of the program, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio. We get your email in real time, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again.
What is the biggest myth that persists about the man Muhammad?
Essentially the same as the myth that's portrayed about the religion that he founded, Islam, namely that he was a man of peace, which was not. Of course, you know, even Gibbon, Edward Gibbon, the British author of The Decline and the Fall of the Roman Empire, called him a barbarian, and that he had the Quran in one hand and the sword in the other. So the myth is that he was a peaceful man, and he wasn't. And that's how he is portrayed and believed by many Muslims to be, but that's the myth.
So when they celebrate the birthday today, how do they remember the man himself? Not how do they celebrate. How do they remember this man? How is Muhammad regarded by Islam?
Well, you know, to answer your question, one has to ask one other question or make another comment. We don't even know 100% certain whether he was born in 570 A.D. That is the date that is commonly listed. But most biographers will say we're not 100% certain, but they do not know the date. If you don't know the year, the date is even more questionable. And there in itself is, when they celebrate it, it's, you know, it's just not been ever established historically on what day he was born. And it's even doubt whether 570 was the year that he was born. Commonly, that's the year that's cited, but that's not 100% certain.
So into what kind of a world was the man Muhammad born, and how did he carve out his place in it, in a nutshell?
Well, yeah, just briefly, he was born, some biographers, most say that his father died before he was born. One biographer back in the 18th century, George Sale, the first British biographer in the mid-1700s, said his father was 2 years old. Then he was raised as a foster child, and at age six, his grandfather had him for 2 years, and then at age eight, his uncle, Abu Talib, reared him basically to adulthood. And he was, even before that, as a child, his mother gave him up to a wet nurse. He had little or no formal education. Most biographers say he could not write. There's the odd one that thinks he did or was able to, but that's questionable. And he, you know, grew up in a society that was very much oriented to the Arabic way of life, where males were in total control and dominance. They were lived in Saudi Arabia. He was born in Mecca, and early in his life, he became engaged in working with caravans. And then when he married a widow who was 15 years older than he was, and he took over her caravan, she was a profitable, profit-making, business-oriented woman. And so that basically is where he got his start. And then he received a revelation, so to speak. The angel spoke to him, the angel Gabriel, and he was about 40 years old. This is about 710. And for 3 years, he really did not do anything with it. But 3 years later, he began to preach the religion of Islam, but it never took with most of the people in Mecca. In fact, some of his own relatives or ancestors wanted to do away with him. So in 622, he took the trip up to Medina, or Medina, as is often said, and then he changed his posture to violence. Before that, he was not violent in the Orient because he thought he could get people to follow his own religion by means of persuasion. But he only had about 50 or 60 people when he took his hijra up to Medina. And so he lived in an Arabic society where there were a lot of tribes, a lot of intertribal conflict, and he fought many of them, ultimately gained control over most of them, and then developed a religion that spread throughout Arabia and then later on to other areas.
I've always been curious about this because he can't have been the only person claimed to have received divine revelation, can't have been the only person claimed to have spoken for God. Why do you think, looking back at it sociologically, historically, Islam caught on the way that it did and has persisted to this day?
Well, one explanation is that he basically satisfied his followers after he was able to conquer and plunder many tribes, satisfy them with material goods, give them women, women as slaves, giving them women otherwise. And this had great appeal in the society among the Arabs in which of the time. And that is perhaps one of the most, the best explanation as to why. And then there was the element of fear, that if you didn't follow his dictates, you did that at the expense of your life. So basically, it was a material attraction, sexual attraction, and also the fear of losing your life if you didn't conform or become one of his followers.
Can we overestimate the degree to which the life of Muhammad, not even the Quran per se, but the life of Muhammad as it is recorded in Islamic tradition, is in essence the religion of Islam today?
Oh, yes. Yes, very, very much. And so in fact, you know, I've said it many times, and we hear in the news media about radical Islam, that is really true Islam. All they need to do is read the Quran, which spells it out very, very clearly. Now, granted, there are many Muslims who are, you know, like many Christians, who are basically nominal and not involved, but that's not true Muslim. And if you talk to whether it's the Al-Qaeda people or the other groups that are violently oriented, they quote the Quran every time, and they're right. They're following the Quran. The whole concept of jihad is in the Quran and in the Hadith. So that's what he started, and that's what the so-called radicals, which I don't accept, I just say they're the true Muslims, want to continue and spread.
Two final questions. How do we, or how is it recorded that that Muhammad met his end? How did he die?
Well, he died with the presence of a number of his wives. The most favorite one was Aisha, whom he married when she was 6 years old, and then at age 9 consummated the marriage sexually. And he died in anger because a couple of his wives meant to give him a physic, and he thought, having had a previous experience where one woman was going to poison him, that this was the whole thing over again, and he made them drink it to make sure it wasn't poisoned, in fact. And so he died basically in anger with his wife, several wives present. And he was buried at night in the dark.
We hear from American presidents, from people who claim to know things about Islam, that Islam is a religion of peace, and in essence, Muhammad's legacy is one of peace. What is Muhammad's true legacy?
His true legacy is that he was a violent man. In fact, he was, if you will say, the first Muslim terrorist. In fact, in my book, I document how he himself took the sword and killed individuals and praised others who did it, killed other individuals for him. And so that's the legacy of him, but that's the legacy that's not heard, that's swept under the rug, and political correctness will not permit it to surface. And that's the unfortunate thing, and that's why they call it religion of peace, which is actually a colossal lie.
With only 15 seconds, do the thoroughgoing Muslims, followers of Muhammad, believe that their religion is a religion of peace?
Yes and no. They believe it's a peace if everybody capitulates to them. Then it's peaceful, if no one resists to them. But not in that it's a religion that will bring about peace by means of persuasion and without the sword.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Check it out under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure.
When we come back, we're going to be with Ken Samples for the remainder of this hour of Issues, Etc. on this Monday afternoon, March the 1st. We're beginning a three-part daily series with him on answering tough questions about the Christian faith. Today, we're going to deal with the existence of God. Many, most, would probably grant the existence of God, although arguments, classical Christian arguments, and some of them a little more philosophical, have been around in favor of the existence of God for a long time. Can anyone know that God exists? You know, there are positions where people will say the safest position is the agnostic position. I can't know if God exists, and even if I could know it, which I can't, I couldn't claim to know who God is. Many people will say I can't see him, I can't detect him or measure him, therefore he must not exist. How do we answer these objections? We'll be right back with Ken Samples.
Think big screens belong in the movie theater, not at church? Think garage bands should stay in the garage, not be jamming in front of the altar? Hey, we do too. Come join us at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, for services that are reverent and relevant, vibrant and traditional. Divine service on Saturday at 6 p.m., on Sunday morning at 7:45 and 10, with Sunday school and Bible class in between at 9. Join us. Not a big screen or garage band in sight. Promise.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video, A Cloud of Witnesses.
What went for Mary, the angel speaks in her ear and changes who she is precisely what happens to every Christian. The Lord speaks and he changes you.
James is a great example to us of sober-minded churchmanship.
The cross looms over all of John's ministry. It's about the cross, the Lamb of God.
We see in Nicholas his love of Jesus Christ acting out in mercy for his neighbors, and we see a role model there that we can imitate.
The church, when she sets the day aside to remember St. Elizabeth, is remembering this shining light of benevolent charity and humility.
It's not a popular position, you know, to stand for true doctrine, and yet that's what Ambrose does.
You can watch A Cloud of Witnesses, our new YouTube video, under the support page at issuesetc.org. Historic, authentic Christian radio. Issues, etc.